Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is an old friend, Billy Easton, executive director of the Alliance for Quality Education, a coalition mobilizing communities across the state to keep New York true to its promise of ensuring a high-quality public education to all students, regardless of zip code. Welcome, Billy Easton.
Thanks, Alan. It's always a pleasure to be here.
How goes the battle?
Well, the battle is being waged, and it's a critically important moment right now because this coming Tuesday, Governor Cuomo will be putting out his budget. And frankly, from everything we're hearing, it's not going to be adequate for what our schools need.
There was just a letter signed by a whole bunch of assembly people, Democrats particularly, who said, hey, wait a second, Scrooge, you know, basically, don't do this. Is that because they anticipated that you weren't getting what you needed?
Yeah, there were 83 members of the Assembly and Senate who sent a letter to the governor saying we need a $1.9 billion increase.
Which is an interesting number, isn't it? Because that's the $2 billion he wants to give away in tax cuts.
That's right. He wants to give $2.2 billion away in tax cuts, primarily targeted to the wealthy and corporations. And he likes to say that our schools are, you know, we spend too much money in education. It's just not factually accurate. The fact is that we have been underfunding high-need school districts ever since he got in office, and the students are paying the price.
But we keep hearing from people like him, if not him directly, that New York puts more money into education than per student than anybody else does, and we're not getting the results other people are.
Well, actually, in the places we do put the more money in, we get tremendous results because we put more money in wealthy districts.
Scarsdale, New York.
Exactly. And on average, we spend $8,600 per pupil more in the wealthy districts than in the poor districts. We really have a system of two public education systems. That's what the governor said when he's running for
office.
Sort
of segregation.
It's economic segregation, and the governor has never done anything to address this problem. It's gotten worse since he took over. Actually, we had the rally this week, and the Speaker of the State Assembly, Sheldon Silver, came, and he said, we can no longer afford to make education a luxury that's only for the children of the rich.
Well, what are the solutions to that, Billy Easton? In other words, the governor has called for the combining of school districts. Maybe the state should run everything.
Well, the state hasn't actually had a great track record of running everything. And they've taken over one school district and they haven't figured out how to improve things. You can't do it without classroom resources. It's not all about money, but you can't do it without the money. And the first solution is that the governor's budget has to get serious. The governor has never gotten serious about education. He's got an education reform commission. But so far, they failed to address the fundamental issues that exist, the huge inequities. We have total inequality in our schools, and the governor needs to put the $1.9 billion in his budget and make sure that enough of it goes to high-need districts, and then it needs to be spent well. It needs to be wisely spent in programs at work.
Let's talk a little current events. New York City has a mayor, Bill de Blasio, who has made no secret of his idea that you really have to improve all schools. And this idea of giving money to charter schools may not be the wisest way to go. He hasn't said, I don't want charter schools, but he has said, let the charter schools pay rent for the buildings. Now, the charter school people, just to be fair, always say that we are public schools. But there is an increasing sense that there's competition over educational philosophy between the mayor and the governor. What do you think?
Well, I think the competition is sort of in vogue in education. A lot of the charter school people, for instance, have pushed this idea that we should compete. And, you know, I think that Mayor de Blasio is right. The charter schools, they're labeled as public schools, but they're privately run schools. And those privately run schools should pay rent and not just disadvantage the existing public schools. There's clearly a big...
Why do they disadvantage the public schools?
Well, they take space. They're subsidized by, you know, the public school, by getting a free rent if they're in a public school building, whereas some charter schools have to pay rent. There's favoritism in the way Mayor Bloomberg had given those things out. They take away space that means that that the public schools then don't have libraries, or their students have to eat lunch at 10 a.m. so that the charter school students can have the lunch at noon, all kinds of things like that. You know, so there's that whole issue. The other issue I do want to get back to is the one you brought up about, okay, so what do we expect in terms of there's a lot of noise about this potential conflict between Mayor de Blasio and Governor Cuomo. And Governor Cuomo has said, well, I want to provide, in response to de Blasio's demand for pre-K for every kid.
Well, wait a second, Liz. This is very important, because I'm sure everybody's listening is in, there may be a few who don't, that Bill de Blasio ran for mayor, said every child in New York City should have a pre-K education. And as I knew he would, and predicted he would, Andrew Cuomo came back and said, okay, if that's all you need, I'll give you that. I'll find the money for that. But de Blasio now comes back, we're playing chess here, and says, okay, but we have to tax the rich more to make sure that this happens.
Well, yeah. So Bill de Blasio has said that he wants to tax New York City to have the to get the state to authorize New York City to raise their own local income tax on their own millionaires in order to pay for all four-year-olds in New York City to have full-day pre-K. Andrew Cuomo has said, well, wait, we can do it without taxes. I did it last year. Well, he did it last year, but he did it for 2% of kids across the state. Okay, so Bill de Blasio wants to do it.
You mean he got pre-K for 2%?
2%. Yeah, that's right. He only added pre-K, full-day pre-K for 2% of kids. That leaves 98% of kids out in the cold. Okay, Bill de Blasio says, I want to do it right now for every single four-year-old in New York City. And it's my local voters voted on this. I ran on this. Everybody knows the voters in New York City said, we want this. They elected him by an overwhelming margin. And he says, I can pay for it. Here's the plan to pay for it, by taxing our own millionaires.
Now, I know why it's important. Why don't you tell everybody
Sure.
why it's so important?
Pre-K is the most cost-effective investment you can make in education. Children are then more ready for kindergarten. They actually perform better in math and reading as they get into elementary school and beyond. The studies show that quality pre-K, as a result, students are more likely to graduate from high school, more likely to go to college, will more likely earn more money in their course of their lifetime, which then benefits society as they pay their taxes to the state, and they are less likely to have problems with the law. So it's a no-brainer to do full-day pre-K. Now, the big question with Cuomo is this. He's going to come out with his budget. He's got the nice rhetoric about pre-K. But there's a big difference between saying, I'm going to do it for all kids, or I'm going to do it for some. Okay? A huge difference. And the fact of the matter is, Governor Cuomo's education policies have generally been, I'm going to try to get the talking point, but do the education policy on the cheap. And that's just not good enough. That hasn't been good enough so far. That's been the big failure of his administration. Education is probably his biggest failing.
Well, but is he taking money away from schools?
You know, his first year in office, he made massive cuts. What he's done since then, he's made increases that don't keep up with the cost of inflation in those schools. So what happens is, while he's not cutting money, he's cutting programs. So he has absolutely taken away educational opportunities, things like foreign language programs, career technical education, tutoring programs, college credit courses called advanced placement. All of these has been cut.
How about music? I mean,
music, art, you know, it's been pushed aside. He's sort of, you know, gone with, you know, big emphasis on testing, and cut the resources that we need for teaching and learning.
What's wrong with testing?
Too much testing. And the misuse of testing is a bad thing. Obviously, testing is a part of education, so you can assess where students are at. But a high-stakes test, you know, schools and teachers are graded on, it drives teaching to the test. It undermines actually quality of learning. So again, he's gone in that route, but he's gone away from actually providing the resources. He says, well, we increased funding, but he knows that the money hasn't kept up with the actual cost, and the schools have suffered cuts. In fact, just this week, the state comptroller, Tom DiNapoli, came out with a report that said that our schools are in fiscal stress.
What did he mean by that?
Well, what it means is that they don't actually have enough money to do the things they need to do, and that the state policies now that are really squeezing the schools for resources, and there's nowhere for them to go for the finances they need to educate our kids.
No, Tom DiNapoli is a remarkable man as far as I'm concerned. And it takes a lot of guts to put a red flag in front of the governor.
Well, you know, the timing is good because it's right now that the governor needs to hear that this is the problems going on in their schools, because he's coming up with his budget this coming Tuesday. We just hope he's listening You know, fundamentally, the biggest challenge that Governor Cuomo faces in education is that we have two systems of education, one for the rich and one for the poor, and they're both public systems. That's what he said when he was running for governor, but he has failed to do anything about it. It's a huge failing of his administration that he has failed to address the biggest educational issue there is.
Do you think the business class, the rich people who put money into charter schools and are very proud of it, do you think that somehow it has to do with resentment about putting public resources into schools?
Well, you know, I hate to stereotype any group of people.
Sure.
And I think there are a lot of wealthy people and people from the business, you know, corporate leadership who support public education and have stepped forward and said, I'm willing to pay more taxes. We see that with the de Blasio plan now. There are people, I'm willing to pay my fair share in order to fund. However, there are certainly people out there who have sort of an ideological resentment against leveling the playing field and against paying their fair share in order to make sure that every kid has an opportunity. And that's unfortunate and it's wrong and it's not a progressive value. It's not the kind of progressive value that Governor Cuomo has articulated that he wants to be a progressive and he wants New York to be a progressive beacon. On education, we're definitely not there. We're not a progressive beacon. And so far, Governor Cuomo's policies have not been progressive on education. But I do think there is an issue where the governor has definitely, in the past, taken the side of the wealthy, the 1%. He did it with tax cuts in 2011 on millionaires and billionaires. And he's got the challenge once again now as he faces whether to allow de Blasio to raise taxes.
Now, Billy Easton, do you think if the Senate, which I think has been kept Republican, largely in part of some of the actions of the governor, who wants a modifying group who could say no. But we know that the progressives in the Senate caucus, the Democratic caucus, are more likely to spend money on things like education. If the Senate went Democratic, what are the political implications of that? I'm having fun with this question, by the way. I just want you to know, pulling your tail.
You know, here's what I actually think. Here right now in 2014, with the Senate we have, the governor sometimes seems to blame the Senate for why he can't do certain things.
Right, just like Poppy did, just like his father did.
Right. You know, in 2011, he says, well, we have to cut taxes on the millionaires and billionaires because the Senate. Well, actually, he was the main guy pushing it, okay?
Without question.
And, you know, if he says, well, we can't let de Blasio raise taxes on the millionaires in New York City for pre-K because of the Senate, you know, I feel like he's making an excuse. His job is to lead. He's shown he can bend the Senate to his will at times. Let's see where he stands. You know,
No, but I'm asking you a question. Yeah. I'm trying to get you into trouble here.
Okay.
If the Democrats take the Senate, will your job be made easier?
It might be. You know, what we have right now is that the Senate Democrats need to be quite vocal as well. And we need to see the Senate Democrats out there pushing themselves loud and clear for this now. Not, you know, in politics, there's always the what if this happened.
Yeah, but there's a left-right spectrum.
There is.
I think the Senate Democrats are more to the left side than the Republicans are.
They definitely are. But I'm in the world of politics where I want to know, not what would you do for me in the what-if situation, but what are you going to do for kids today?
Now, Billy Easton,
right now,
you guys take money from the unions. You know you do.
Yes.
Okay. And the unions are, I'm sorry to say this to you, are largely responsible that the Senate Republicans were kept where they were for most of their lives so that the unions could play the Democrats in the Assembly and the Republicans in the Senate off against each other. How do you plead?
You know what? I have no influence over what any of the unions do politically. And our position is this, as far as any funding from them, we take it for the advocacy work we lay out to do. We
have
a very specific agenda, and they don't then tell us what to do. We go to them and say, this is what we're going to do. If you like it, support us. You know, and those things that we do, we put a lot of work into making sure that parents, students, and communities have a voice here in Albany, and that they're, like, just this week, 1,500 people came to Albany, parents, students, community members, some teachers, to raise their voice to say, we need to be heard. Our schools need good funding and fair funding and good programs.
Speaking of unions, NYSET, the New York State Teachers Union, is calling for a no-confidence vote in Ed Commissioner John King. How come?
Well, you know, we have not taken that same position as them, you know.
Is he important? Is King important?
King's important, and the Board of Regents are important. The position that we have, that we agree with NYSET on here, is that the push for what they call the Common Core.
I wanted to talk to you about that. So go ahead.
The push around the testing and the use of testing.
Well, let's go back to the Common Core. They're tied together,
okay? Yeah. That's gone too quickly. Okay?
And what is the Common Core?
So the Common Core is a good idea. it says, okay, it came out of the federal government, but it was initiated really by the local governors association across the country to raise the standard, the curriculum across the country so that the curriculum would be aligned to prepare students for college in the 21st century. And so that was a good idea, higher order learning. The problem has been the implementation. In the implementation side, so what we've gotten out of it, there's been very little emphasis on actually raising the quality of curriculum, although school cuts have undermined the quality of curriculum. But what they've done is raised the difficulty of the tests, and at the same time, tied to the teacher evaluation system, there's a much more frequency of tests also. So you have more testing and harder tests, and we had an astounding rate of students who did not pass that test that this past year. It was a shock for a lot of people. There's a lot of stress with the quantity of testing on teachers, students, schools. It tends to sort of distort the educational process.
But I'm married to an education professor who couldn't agree with you more. But just for the sake of everybody who may be screaming at the radio right now, don't we have to test to make sure that there's not a lot of garbage going on?
Well, sure. But the purpose of testing should be to assess students' progress and provide them with additional instructional assistance where they need it. What we've done instead is we've adopted sort of this corporate model, the Wall Street model, where tests become a bottom line against which you can measure teachers and schools and say, we're going to weed out the failures. And that is a failed idea. That system has never been tried anywhere else successfully. Countries that are outperforming us by wide margins, like our next door neighbors, Ontario, Canada, they don't do that. They focus on more focus on teaching and learning and less focus on testing. So testing has a role, but testing should not be the purpose of education. And in the way that the Common Core and the teacher evaluation system have been implemented, in some ways, it feels like that's what's happened.
Now, don't get me wrong, Billy Easton. I'm a great fan of teachers. I think they're the most important people in this country, bar none. But there are some folks who get through the system without being all that well-prepared or all that good at their jobs. How do you deal with those people?
Well, I think that what the research shows is that the thing that actually works to improve the quality of teaching is a lot of supports. You know, peer supports, master teachers, teacher mentoring, teacher induction programs when new teachers come in where they have a mentor who's assigned to them to really help them through their first couple of years, collaboration between teachers within the school to create a cadre that's focused on quality.
Yeah, but what if you got a really bad teacher?
Well, look, ultimately, if you have a teacher who's really failing, they should be given their proper amounts of warning and support, and then they should ultimately be let go if that's the only option.
Should we pay teachers more?
I think that teacher pay and benefits is, and good high quality teacher pay and benefits is absolutely important to keeping high quality teachers in the classroom. That's what countries like Finland, that's what they do, and they have one of the best education systems in the world. So it does make sense to pay teachers well. It also makes sense to invest to make sure that we have the programs our schools need in all our classrooms.
So you had a rally the other day, and there were 1,500 people or so, and they were singing, "We Shall Not Be Moved," outside the governor's office. Now, does that work? I know it probably helps the esprit de corps of the teachers and of the unions, but does it help get Cuomo to move?
Well, I think it helps especially the parents and students to have the hope that they're going to get a better quality education for their kids. Absolutely, that kind of grassroots pressure is essential to moving the needle here in Albany. And it puts pressure on the governor and also on our legislators. Even our friends in the legislature need to get the push that they have to deliver. We see great response from Democrats in the Assembly, and Democrats in the Senate. And, you know, it takes all parties to make a budget. We're early in the budget process. This is the beginning, not the end of our mobilizing and advocacy. You're going to see legislators are going to be hearing from people in their own districts. We're going to have more rallies. We're going to have more pressure, grassroots pressure. And that grassroots pressure is an essential part of getting the outcomes you need in the budget.
So, you know, you have this very difficult job, Billy Easton. I mean, the Alliance for Quality Education, and your job is to make sure that more money gets put into this. I know a little bit about this governor's office, and I know that they reach out to adversaries. Do they reach out to you?
Yes. We have a cordial relationship with folks in the governor's office, and we obviously don't always agree. Where we can find agreement, we try to collaborate. We certainly try to keep in both directions the dialogue open, the conversation going. You know, it's in this world, he's the major decision maker in the state. We have to talk.
Have you ever picked up the phone and heard him on the other end of the phone?
I've spoken with the governor in the past. He's
gracious though when he does that, isn't he?
Well, you know, the governor expresses his opinions and listens, and he can be very gracious, and he can be very
tough.
Opinionated.
And he can be very tough.
He can be.
Yeah. Well, I find him that even though I've been critical of areas, particularly in one of areas like this of him, that I have never been subjected to the hammer. And that's fascinating to me because I have certainly not reserved my opinions to myself. So I wanted to ask you one more question. And that was that the governor, who I said has kept the Republicans in power in the Senate, if the governor, and this goes directly to what your job is, has kept the five Democratic senators who moved over four, really, into the other aisle and kept them in power, do you ever talk to those people? Because they say they're Democrats and that they're progressives and that they're for education. Now, what role do they play in all this?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. You know, we met with Senator Klein's office just yesterday, just this week, I mean. And, the independent Democrats, they're in many ways in the catbird seat. And you see it playing out in a big way.
I don't think so. I think they said in the very beginning they were going to be co-leaders. One week is going to be the Republicans, one week them. But it sure hasn't worked out that
way. It certainly didn't work out that way last year. I think that this year, you know, there's a question, and you start seeing, especially around this de Blasio pre-K plan, where Jeff Klein, the Senate independent Democratic leader, has said, wait a minute, I'm gonna force this issue.
What if they don't get a vote? And that's so important. In other words, he can say anything he wants, but if Dean Skelos, the Republican leader, doesn't let the issue come to the floor or find some machination for not letting it happen, then it's all baloney.
Well, I guess on that issue, it's pretty clear. If they can't actually get a vote on priority issues for them, then what's the point of being a co-leader? What kind of a co-leader are you?
Oh, because they get more money, they get a different position.
But as far as actual power, you know, you're here in Albany, no matter what your position is, you're here, your elected official gives you power, and are you going to exert that power? And if you're the co-leader of the Senate,
then you
need to be able to get legislation that's a priority to you to the floor for a vote. And, you know, if you can't, then it really questions whether it's a real power or whether you're really willing to use that power or other things are your priority. So I think that's going to be
what other thing could be their priority?
Officials like to stay in power. They like to remain elected, you know, and they like to have the all the perks of that. So, you know, I really think this is going to be a big test this year for the independent Democrats. I hope that Senator Klein, he's been saying all the right things on the pre-K piece. I hope that he actually comes through and delivers. That would be a real testament to the fact that he actually does have that kind of power and is willing to use it.
And if he doesn't?
Well, I think it's going to be a problem. You know, I think there's a lot of people who last year were very upset about the fact that the independent Democrats came in and then, you know, joined with the Republicans and became part of the Republican conference, essentially. And they weren't able to deliver on any of the progressive agenda items that were before them last year, not a single one. You know, whether it was campaign finance or women's issues.
Well, they did do gun control.
They did that. That was early on in the process, and that was driven by the governor, and there was no, you know, there's a controversy backlash.
But do they have to do what the governor tells them to, those four? Some people call them traitors or, you know. Whatever.
They don't have to. You know, I think any legislator can, every legislator is an independent person who has the power to act on their beliefs and exert themselves. And I'm assuming, I have to assume and have to hope that that's what we're going to see from the independent Democrats this year.
Our guest has been Billy Easton, Executive Director of the Alliance for Quality Education. Billy, it's always a great pleasure to have you here and to sort of see where you are, because it's a good way of judging where the state is. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Alan.
The The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.